If there was one thing I could take away from the first time I met the Jet Voices podcast guest today, was laughter. Every single time the man stood up to grab the mic, everybody in the room in the conference venue laughed. And he has a way of making you laugh about issues that you should be crying about. Whether it's him blasting his radiant and positive energy in the Niger Delta, in Benin, in Nigeria, or in Ottawa, Canada, or in Geneva, Switzerland, this man has made a huge and powerful impact on our understanding of the impacts of plastic pollution and oil pollution, particularly. He caught my eye recently when he was holding up a placard which said, "Don't make Africa your plastic dumping ground." This is the cheekiness, the hilarious cheekiness with which the man executes his work. A young, dedicated leader. He is the founder of an amazing organization called Connected Advocacy for Empowerment and Youth Development Initiative. He also recently won the Junior Chamber International 10 Outstanding Young People's Awards. He's out there making us laugh, but also grabbing our attention about the realities of what oil and plastic does to the community. What I loved most about our conversation with him was that he outlined that since 1956, when oil was discovered in the Niger Delta, the communities locally, what they have suffered, okay, is polluted rivers, dead fish, degraded farmland. Like, imagine waters lighting up, flaring because of like gas and benzene in the water, right? The woman suffering miscarriages, right? So much poverty, right? And this contradiction, this paradox, has what started our funny and hilarious but highly impactful brother Prince Israel Oreka's story. Are you gonna enjoy the ride on the jet with this one? Enjoy.
Welcome aboard our jet. The Just Energy Transition is a new podcast with the goal of amplifying the stories that matter most. Our mission: a just energy transition, raising the voices of untold inspiring stories. At JET, we hope every listener becomes a true activist and every story a catalyst for real change.
Prince, my brother.
Hey.
My brother, welcome to the JET, the Just Energy Transition. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
A very good day, good evening, good morning, good night, wherever you're hearing us from. This is Prince Israel Reka, live on the JET program today.
Yeah. So there's a lot, man, but you have a fire, you have a hunger, and I recently saw you going crazy again in the streets, holding up a placard reading, "Let Africa Breathe." What is that all about?
Wow. That was a campaign that was born out of our host communities, because 1956 to this present day, we've been producing crude oil. And my region happens to be the world capital of pollution and energy poverty. And we enjoyed
it. Hold on. I mean, we got to get this right. So first and foremost, you're in Nigeria right now.
Yeah, I'm in Nigeria. I'm from the Niger Delta area.
Which specific town or city?
Yeah, I am from the Niger Delta, I'm where the king lived, Benin City, in Niger Delta.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Now, you just said something that we can't just move, you know, we can't just pass this. We got to talk about. You said your region is the highest polluter in the world.
Yes. With my no remediation or reparation. We only have cosmetic and political fixing. Since 1956, where oil was discovered in Nigeria, commercial quantity in a place called Elobiri, and today it has become the 80% mainstay of Nigeria economy, revenue economy, that is driving the economy. But it's truth to tell you that the exploration has brought more cost to us than blessing, in the sense that we enjoy pollution as if it is our birthright to be polluted. We enjoy environmental degradation, poor soil yield, cardiovascular diseases, infections, and every kind of stuff around our own community, even miscarriages from pregnant women. Water that is polluted. This is my community in arts. Dead fish.
Just bring that community in arts to the camera so we can see it clearly.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is my community where your exploration started from since 1956. And we've had dead fish. We don't longer have needs of survival. Our agricultural aid has been polluted due to degraded lands. Most young people today, they've lost their jobs. Some have even died on the Mediterranean Sea just to Europe to find a better life and to have clean air. We have poor yields. Our agroecology system, our social agroecology, our project programs that local community survival has little or no yield. So it discourages people from farming. Because before the discovery of oil, this is our main state of survival. We were farmers. We till the land and we have fishes from the sea. But today, we do no longer have fish to catch because our rivers are polluted. Before you put your food in the fire, you run to the river to get fish. But you can't a whole day and you have nothing to catch. So this is a symbol of frustrated economy and mix of livelihood. You see that little child there? Here, these are stories that paint reality. And this was exhibited in London and also was exhibited in the Niger Climate Change Exhibition.
Okay, now that's good. Yeah, okay, now we can see the full picture.
You see that? So what was the cause? This is the cause, the oil. My country, we neglected our main production. The agricultural sector is moribund, focused on the global north to determine the oil price. The oil price that determines if we have development in our community or not. I was opportunity to visit one of the first oil wells in my community, and among the first in West Africa, precisely, where they've abandoned. I saw an abandoned health center there. And some of the community members now have benzene in their system because of the bad water they drink. And they are now completely devastated due to that. This is what we know as our source of energy supply. This is gas flaring. Because of our energy poverty, power outage, this is what you see every day in the evening where children gather to see the moonlight. And this happens to be our fair share of the problem. They told us is a blessing that he have brought. So this is Nigeria in an explanation. So come to us today. This is how we tell the story of the impact of climate change, environmental degradation, oil and gas pollution in our own community. I belong to the community. I live with the people, and I'm sharing from what we go through here in our community. So our work, our Connected Advocacy. Connected Advocacy is a youth-driven organization with an intersection of environmental justice. I haven't showed you the issues we are going through, our climate action and democratic governance, energy access and youth inclusion. From the creek of the Niger Delta to our national corridors, international platforms across Europe, Africa, we've worked to focus more on ensuring that youth, indigenous people, not like communities where we come from, are not excluded again. They should be part of meaningful engagement in shaping climate justice, energy transition, thanks with that resilient democratic opportunity and economy for all. So this is how we've been rolling, trying to see how we bring the intersection between our impacted communities and what we're facing through, telling our own stories the way they are, not only living there, but we even we run it through easy communication, because pictures tell more than 1,000 words in a book. So we want to tell our story the way it is.
Right.
That is how we've been moving from inception. We've been advancing community engagement, community advocacy, system strengthening, empowering local communities to drive actions from the ground, to engage policy bearers and say the stories the way they are, because most often than not, cosmetic solutions do not really solve the solutions, the problems that we go through. We've lost our traditional means of survival, our cultural and our ancestral lands to oil pollution and extractivism. So for now, we're trying to, that's when I saw your work, the JET, and the good work JET is doing. I said, I think this is an opportunity to amplify what we do here and to also call for more help, partners to support young people, build local community partnership, build capacity to continue to engage until the reforms, the reparation that we want actually comes to fruition. If you talked about the energy transition from the credo of exploration in the Niger Delta, more often than not, you understand that it is a welcome development that we in the local parts of this area are embracing. Earlier this year, we started the PULSE. The PULSE is an acronym for a local campaign that we amplify into Let Africa Breathe. PULSE is simply Protect, Unite for a Safer Environment. So if polluters, local communities, citizens, they begin to move towards reducing their environmental and climate footprints, it will go a long way to reduce the level of emission at which is destroying our local communities today. So that is why the JET program is what we take keenly into our hearts. But we are not praying for inclusion and access, because as to speak, over 60 million of Africans, they are still without energy. And my own state, we have over 60%, 63% in my country without energy access. More worrisome and more painful to note is that my current president is currently transiting from using the general grid to a renewable energy plant, leaving us now in total darkness. And we also need to begin to see how we also begin to embrace clean energy and energy assets. So this is how we've been rolling. The Let Africa Breathe campaign was what we gathered as one of our local to global consultation to share the stories of how environmental impacts of oil transition, gas transition, from production to transportation and to those export terminals here in Europe and every part of the world that those oil are going to. We want to tell them that there are communities that bear the brunt of those impacts. There are people livelihoods are hanged on the production that Europe and other parts of Africa and America are enjoying, that they need to look at the environmental impact and look carefully on how to begin to confirm true remediation. True remediation in the sense that when you use a product or a community, there is need for you to do a give back to ensure you fix the where you extract from and ensure these people are restored. Restorative justice is not too much to ask for. But who will drive it? That is why you see our campaigns taking toll into the global platforms. June last year, I think we're in Germany, on the streets of Germany to protest, to tell the people. When I checked the Google map there, it said the air quality is good, 100%. And we in the Niger Delta have never seen my phone or my Google map tells me air quality is good, because what we breathe here is poison as air, because it's already polluted. Our water full of benzene is polluted. Our health, cardiovascular diseases, miscarriages of every kind is what we experience here. And these are further worsening and reduce our life expectancy and lack of jobs for young people. So different kinds of means now young people are not taking into to survive. Even some now joined Russia army just to survive now, because we've lost our livelihoods. I was in the radio station yesterday on television on African Discourse. That was the topic. And people that call in, they say they are even ready to go to help Russia to fight war. We never support this. But because of a lack of what, degraded environment, not able to get, young people are not able to get themselves jobs. That's why we are advocating for this energy transition to create green jobs for local people. Last year, October, we engaged the House of Assembly, the National Assembly Chairman of Renewable Energy, on how do they begin to create policies that will be inclusive. Having young people who are over 62% of our population be included in this new energy transition work plan. How can local communities begin to drive local action to ensure resource mobilization towards energy democracy and citizen-led energy access that is driven locally for the local people? So how do we create these jobs? Because there are more jobs in the energy access space. Young people can create a niche for themselves as well as also preserving their environment. So we are calling on all our sundry listening to this tape today that there is need for us to do the work together to co-create. This is what Connected Advocacy, where we work, is. Let us begin to see how we domesticate local actions. Let the local lead these actions. We bear the brunt. I'm speaking from my heart right now, because this is what I'm feeling. It's not what I copy and paste or what I ask GPT to do for me. This is what I see every day. Well, GPT is not doing this for me. I'm telling the people of African descent, of the global north, the global south, is our time to change the rules of engagement. Let us allow local people to drive actions. You can put those technology transfer to support these energy assets. If you find out now, if we do not take this energy assets, the JET initiative properly, it will still end up in the hands of the elites. Then the issue still remains. So the locals are angry. We are saying enough is enough. Let's build our capacity. Help us to be part of the energy transition value chain, so that it can create jobs for us and also help restore our degraded environment. Our people are no longer smiling because we plant our crops. It comes out, we pour it. We have school fees to pay, but we do not have the resources to pay them, because our environment, which we depend on to supply our needs, has been degraded by the operations of the IOCs and LOCs who do not.
What are IOCs and LOCs?
IOCs is the International Oil Corporations or Companies, and the LOCs is the Local Oil Companies or Corporation.
Right. Okay. So tell me something. When you were in your early years, let's say between the years of 0 and 10, 12, 13, before you became a teenager, let's say, what was your experience there of the fishing community in the Delta that you just showed us the pictures of, the farming communities in the Delta that you just showed us the pictures of, and, you know, experience of the yields, experience of the fresh fish production via catching. Just tell us, how was the experience then? Okay.
Yes, I think I did a video of it. I went to those rivers myself to go see how things are now and the way they were before. Before now, we used to have fishes very close to us. Children can even fish. We can be cooking our soup, and somebody will come to the river to get fish. Mm-hmm. It's as accessible as that. Mm-hmm. Visitors are coming when they are going back, they go with bags of load of fish, because that is what as our souvenirs to say thank you for visiting us, because that is what we have. Just as also those who are also in the farming community, which are also I do both, will give you gari made from cassava, processed cassava. It's called gari here. We'll package it in a bag and say thank you for visiting. This is what local communities use as souvenir then. But right now, since OSP, and most of the OSPs enters into our various waters, are destroying our aquatic lives. We do not have those experiences anymore. We can't even tell the stories physically the way they are to our children anymore, because they are no longer fishes. They are all dead. We have dead fishes. So because of the level of pollution in our seas. So that is why I think the just energy transition should be a project for all. Since that can provide the roadmap for transiting from fossil fuel to renewables. Everybody, both our governments, the multinational companies, the local communities, they need to take it wholeheartedly to ensure the implementation gets to the grassroots, where we, the sufferers. Because if you end it with the elite pockets or the elite table, it will never get to those at their local communities. And most of our local voices are being infiltrated, because they will just do the advocacy at the top, while those in the local community still suffer the same issue. That is why you hear from generation to generation, some same voices keep saying the same thing, but we've not gotten any headway. So let's get down to the community. I think also early last year, April, I did a community dialogue around where community will soon go on extinction by 2062 because of...
Extinction?
Yes.
Extinction?
Because of
this pollution, because of this lack of food production. Yes. Okay. Yes. All right.
Yes. It has led to increase in sea level rise, that the community now is being submerged inside the water now, and there's pollution going on there. It's in a larger community, a Womimo community in Ondo State, Niger Delta area. Will soon go on extinction by 2060 if there's no proper embankment to support those local communities. And these people are predominantly fishermen. I travel like over 30 minutes to get to them on the water, and 45 minutes, pardon. And seeing the level of sea level rise and degradation that they experience, my heart breaks. I don't know how. And government is paying lip service to those attention as we speak. And this is supposed to have what we call rapid response. This is a disaster that needs to be nipped on the board by a sustainable solution, not lip service. I still feel for those community men, women, youths who are now living alien in other neighboring communities, not all now. They're losing their population on a daily basis because the sea has almost taken over their community. So this impact of environmental degradation and climate change is real. Let us not shy away from it. It's real. So as we continue to take drastic measures to mitigate those issues, I think it will be better for us. So I'm so happy that you brought up from speed today to share some of all our activities around. So this is what necessitates the Let African Breathe campaign. It's a story from the local crying for help, asking for collaboration, asking for co-creation, asking for these locals to have a seat in those tables. Global decisions are taken every year, annually, it's 2 cups. But these people that actually bear the brunt never have their voices in those rooms. Those black out there, they only take their text. You hear them say localization. How localization is those interventions? You hear them say implementation. How implementable is those interventions? You hear them working together. How are we working together when those who are in the creeks, who are in the front line, still continue to bear this brunt, flooding and various impacts that the climate change has to offer. So please, with this jet, please keep amplifying the voices of local people on the ground that the fight is not over. We want to work with those in authorities. We want to work with locals. We want to ensure collaboration. We want to ensure sustainability. We want to ensure clean, just transition. We want clean, just transition. We want energy park where young people can find jobs. Community parks where renewable energy plant is made available. Battery storage system that can power local businesses and transit from the current use of generators to continue to emit in our local areas. This will also help us reduce our climate footprint and also put our own map, our voice in the world map that so we say this story of our impact and so we've seen the solution to mitigate this impact. The impacts are there, but we keep calling and keep asking for collaboration. We want to co-create. So we want to build skills. We want to drive local action. So the global skills are collaborations is required. So that's why we say let us breathe so that we too can also contribute to driving sustainable climate solutions.
So when you go about developing a campaign like Let Africa Breathe, such that we see you on social media, on TV and so forth, holding up these placards, what is really the process? What is the process that you go about from inception of the idea to people standing with placards? And how do you optimize this process to get the maximum impact?
The process starts with the people. The process starts with the issue. The process starts with where we are. Where we are right now, the issues are real. The impacts are there. And the people are feeling this impact. So this is what drives our passion because this is where we are. We do not have another place to go to. So that's why we continue to amplify voices, amplify unified voices, to create the change we want to see. So this is how we started from local voices, where these issues are, taking the stories across the globe to continue to make our people know that true stories of what is happening on the ground so that it can help shape policies. It can help communities who are also investing in fossil fuel to begin to also rethink renewable energy, to be able to rethink communities whose livelihoods are being cut off as exploration, transportation of oil and gas is taking place. People are losing their jobs. People are losing their lives. Their health is being damaged due to these processes. So this is all these processes put together. It's what amplifies our voices to build our critical mass, our movement buildings, to begin to tell these stories across Niger Delta, the nation, and West Africa, and Africa at large, and also come everywhere we can tell this story. That is where we take the African, let the African breathe. I happened to do a study from my own country, Nigeria, to most parts of Africa. The issues are same. Weak policy, lack of coordination, lack of cooperation, poor local performance in resource mobilization, and fair share in our natural resources. So poverty taking over, energy poverty, and we become separated at the global space because we cannot fix our system to drive the actions that we really need. So we always take second fiddle. Africa remains the beautiful bride of the West, while Africa themselves refuse to develop. So they keep giving us policies in chief that are never implementable. They keep leaving us in the dark, and we never see the light. So that's why we are calling on this. Everybody is a just one, and it's for equity to take place, our sustainability, well, our people needs to breathe.
Look, what you're saying is, you're saying a lot of things that are rich, and I just want to plant a flag here on what you mentioned about they. You know, you said they, and when you were saying they, you know, they want to benefit from us, but they don't want to restore, etc. I assume you're speaking to these, you know, international global north, the fossil fuel companies, oil, you know, gas, etc. So now, I want to come back to something you said earlier on about the participation of the youth, of the young people. So there's a contradiction there. You are saying they in the sense that they're not really empowering, or they're not willing to enable the empowered ground forces to emerge. But at the same time, there is an agency that needs to be called for. Now, what is your take on these two contradictions here? You know, having local agency emerging that takes control, that takes the bull by the horns and takes control of the situation, versus being at the mercy of these global north forces, giant forces, which 3, 4, 5 communities can never take on by themselves.
So that is why I said, for equity's sake, I told you that young people are the major here. Young people has their number, but in political participation, where decisions are taken that impact on our local communities, most of these young people do not have that platform to actually tell the story of how the shoe itches them. So young people here experience what we call closed civic space, which has reduced the level of participation. I think 2 weeks ago, we held a press conference to tell our legislators why they should pass the real-time electronic transmission of election results, so that we as young people that are tech-savvy, we could use technology to drive the outcome of who leads us. Because who leads us, we determine 100% on what comes to us or how we're going to move from one point to other. Bringing the global north into this is that they will always want to work with who we dictate, who we follow their dictation, or we follow what they want. But I think there should be change in engagement, rules of engagement. It's not really helping us. For equity's sake, young people from the grassroots need to also be given such opportunities to also develop their own local communities. This will also help reduce our climate migration that you see most young people today migrating to the global north. Then we can develop their own communities to also drive co-sharing opportunities. We have local resources that the global north needs. Local north has technology that local community also needs. Why not we have a fair share of these amenities to also better develop our own culture, to also better develop our own people, so that we too can now share in the same table to provide solution to the world issues. So we local community youth, we have something to bring to the table. But grant us those access, build our capacity, allow us with this technology access. Renewable energy, we have the abundance of sun here. But do we have the technology to drive this? No. So that's why we are saying, if you really want to come with equity, say that comes with equity must come with clean hands. Clean hands here means global north. Give us technology to drive our own local action. And also those in the corridors of power, speak truth to global north. And you too, do the right thing to ensure that our people who have betrayed the trust of governance in these hands of this leader, do the right thing. We sent over 900 text messages 2 weeks ago to tell these legislators that vote the conscience of the youth. Youth wants reserved seats for women. Youth want electoral reforms that will drive local development, that will make the voices of those in the local communities be heard. But what was our take? The tone was changed, and those in the those were in corridors of power, they manipulated it the way they wanted to be, telling us that we do not have enough internet access, as the Association of Telecom Corporations, since we have over 70% that have access to 2G and 5G and the 3G, we all have sufficient internet to go around. But they didn't give us the request of the young people. So that is why I said, let them listen to us so that we can co-create. We are not fighting the elderly. We are not fighting the global node. We are saying, let there be co-creation initiative. Initiative that will allow local community to thrive. Initiative that will put the young people in the decision floor room, whose capacity have been built to drive local actions. The local community have abundant of resources to solve global problems. But these things are not being developed. We have talents, we have resources that are being wallowing here, destroyed just for one single aim, the oil. Apart from oil, we have over different kinds of resources to drive global action, to drive development locally to urban, but they are not being honest because they...
What are those resources? I mean, I want you to put them on the table so that our listeners can understand the landscape of opportunity. So what are these alternative resources to oil that you're saying can drive such economic performance and open such opportunities for the inclusive majority?
Yes. We have, first, for the energy transition, we have the sun in abundance. We have it abundantly here. Sometimes it's risen up to about 42 degrees, 45 degrees, 37 degrees in most time. So we have sufficient sunlight to power any technology that we come. Then we have a very horrible landscape for agroecology to drive healthy food production that young people can also be part of. We have a socio-economic landscape that can provide the market for sales and production because we have the numbers. Just only Nigeria alone, we have over 2.5 million people. That is a huge market. We have arable lands for agroecology, land use that can produce. And we also have critical rare earth minerals that we can use for our aluminium, that we can use for battery productions, that we can use for all our needs. That is why Africa remains the bride of the world, but still underdeveloped. I don't know why the world don't want to develop Africa.
So I want to come back to the issues that you said about this economic resource production, especially coming from your community. You said since 1952, when oil was discovered 56, in Nigeria,
56.
When oil was discovered in...
Yeah, in a low bill, yeah.
You know, so you spoke about it being literally the majority driver of the country's economy. Now, there are several issues here. One is the continued production, consumption, and impacts of fossil fuels, oil, coal, gas, etc. But with you guys, it's mainly oil, okay? So that's one. But second is the restoration issues of damages already done. Now, when you sit and you want to put these issues forth, I want to find out you as Prince, my brother, if a fellow Nigerian says to you, but look, this, even though it has killed my local production, it has at least given me some money to be able to buy food that's produced somewhere else. And so this has done more for me than harm. Or when you speak to your leaders and they say, well, how are we going to build infrastructure? How are we going to fund the national education budget? How are we going to get you there? You're talking about technology. How are we going to teach you technology if we don't build you schools? And we need revenue. And this revenue must come from what we have, which is oil. What if they put this idea forward? But lastly, the most powerful one that is often said is that we are contributing the least. The least. So why should our industrialization be hampered for the sake and the benefit of the global north and to some extent the east, which has benefited from this? This is an oppressive narrative. Do not be fooled, young people of Africa. Do not let them close your eyes. This is our time to industrialize. And you are being closed-minded. You're being fooled. What do you say to that, Prince?
It's a big question, but it's a small answer. The answer is simple, in the sense that
right.
Before 1956, before the discovery of oil, Nigeria was already existing. Nigeria was in pride in gold, pride in cocoa, pride in palm oil, which we were leveraging on as our major source of state land use. So we've been doing this for a very long time. That is where the Europeans came for trade. Singapore came to Edo to come get palm kernel seeds. Today they are the world best in palm production in the world. And where they came to get these seeds from, they are not in the map anymore because they were abandoned. So oil dependency as a national state, I think is not the right direction. It's not sustainable because it's driven by global market. Whatsoever OPEC says, that is what you do. And your budget is now handling oil solely, you are in doom. Because if the oil market price at world market falls to zero, you have nothing to plan with, you have nothing to run the economy. So it's it's not safe making oil as a single state and over 80% of a national economy. Every nation runs through taxation. We need to begin to build our tax system as a means of sustainability, not oil.
Not export, okay.
Oil expansion continues to bring more cost to us because it do not bring the gains that we sold and we so desire. And oil business is not being run by the locals because it's capital intensive. From the production to the transportation to the sales, it's a capital venture.
Okay, so let's say that we had a program where local young people were progressively giving shares, and they over time, let's say in a period, let's say to the next 5 or 10 years, they were empowered to run this. Would your narrative change about this?
My narrative will not change because my environment still continues to degrade. It's all about my planet, my people, my culture, my tradition. And this is our way of life. Our life is hinged on this. That is why the country, my country, Nigeria, has signed into the energy transition that by 2060 in Glasgow, that Nigeria will completely be transiting from fossil fuel, complete phase out by 2060. So if they did not see the impact of this, I think Nigeria wouldn't have committed to net zero. So we signed that protocol, we signed that agreement, though they also bring gas as a just transition alternative, but they've committed to totally transit by 2060. So if they did not see the impact of gas expansion, they did not see the impact of fossil fuel expansion, they wouldn't have signed up to those protocols. I think they were informed by serious science, the IPCC recommendations, and this was not just done because they just want to do it, but they know that the community, the people, life matters. Expanding production is a take that should not be encouraged. For surviving on fossil fuel, we already have a better alternative. Let us begin to work towards the transition. That is why we said transit as you go. Transit as you have the enabling capacity. So if we do not, we fail to, because we do not want to build our own capacity, then how do we transit? We're not going to want to be preparing ourselves, because if it's not a good direction, I don't think the government would have signed into that commitment. So it is a work in progress, though, but it's one thing that we all must continue to see as a way out. Even the multilateral companies, the IOCs, the International Oil Corporation, they already have transition plan, because they know that oil is no longer sustainable. they are all the one venturing into the just energy transition business as you speak, because they have the capital, they have the technology. So I look forward to engage more of these IOCs. So let us ask questions. How are they transiting? How are they committed to our own national commitment to transit by 2060? I think if you help me see them, please help me ask them. That Precision Oreca from Connected Advocacy is asking, how are they planning to transit since they all commit to transition?
Prince, I give you a company, international oil company, that is resistant. I mean, I'm talking about resistant to, no, not the ones you just spoken about that are playing smart and mitigating the future risks of loss of profit. So I'm just talking about a company that says, we're in the business of oil, don't tell us anything else. Just quickly, what did you study, by the way? What's your background, educational background?
Yeah, I study environmental policy and also study early childhood education. So I'm back in the bag.
Okay. All right. So they say to you, well, look, we want you, Prince. You know how to deal with the emotions and psychology of people having studied ECD, and you also have an advantage because you've studied environmental policy.
Yeah.
We need you to come and head up our environmental policy lobby department to get the Nigerian government to reverse these things. And Prince, we are putting on the table $300,000 per year for this position for you. Ow. Today, you have only today to think about it. $300,000 is yours, tax-free, per year, if you help us come up with a lobbying strategy to reverse all this just transition stuff you've just been telling us about. It's nonsense, and oil is the future. What would you say, Prince?
It's a technical question, and I'm so very tempting. It's very tempting. Let us be frank. We, as their own advisor, I will tell them they've signed up to a commitment to transit. So the money they've put in place, I'll use it to do more campaign that will ensure build better understanding to see why this transition is imperative. I will continue to bring them to understand that a profit over people is an old syllabus, that people should be first before profit. So when you bring people first, they will help you build profit. So let's put the people first. Let's put their livelihood first. Is it not somebody that is alive that will use the fossil fuel? When he's not dead, when he's dead with pollution, will he be able to consume the fuel again? So then if you say some pass, some, or just like the animal farm, some are superior than the other, then you are not being fair. So as their minister, I will use their money to do more educational materials, to create more awareness, to bring them to the table to understand the real people that face this impact, to show them the damage that the production has done to livelihood in communities, and let them begin to join in the fight for a just transition. Right. I think there it will can succeed, because it's not gambling. These are human lives, except you do not value human life. Yes, that is how the economy should be. The people should be what drives your profit, not profit solely in the expense of human lives. So if you destroy human lives and you destroy your planet, so how, what do you now leave to? Where do you now spend the profit? Where do you now spend the money you accrue? So when you destroy the environment that is supposed to enjoy the profit. So the environment is our life. We must protect it. Whether you are a polluter or whether you are an oil company person, you are in the street, you are in the frontline community in the Niger Delta, the environment is our life. Protect it. Yes.
So what you're saying is that, hey, look, you're saying is that I would become a guerrilla tactician. I would take the $300,000. I would join the company, but I would use that as an opportunity to shift the narrative. Did I get you correctly?
I will have a lot of resources to make the voices of those on the ground to be heard. So
okay.
It does not be shied away from me. I know some people will say they will not take it. I will take the funds. I use it to build capacity of both those in the yards and there's the IOCs who was, because if you, it's all about superior argument.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing proper understanding to bear. Why do you say this? So when I take them to a working visit to an explorer site or an abandoned community where they've used to make those communities and they are having benzene in their skin, their bloodlines, they are having ions in their blood. When you check their blood samples, you hear they have elements of iron. They have dilapidated medical health centers. People die before they access healthcare. And these were communities that Otwabage, for example, is a community that you should go visit, where the first oil production and commercial quantity started from. It is abandoned to date. They promised a research city there is abandoned. It was not done. So the cottage hospital there is also abandoned. It smells like a graveyard. So this is the aftermath of the same oil that you take from the people. So I'll take them to those exchange visits to see firsthand the impact of oil production. And think that will also help reduce their psyche, to also help begin to see how they should take the energy transition roadmap very serious. And it's going to be a win-win for us. Communities preserve. You are making profit, but life is first. Life is protected. So
I think that's I like that. I mean, I really like that take. I don't hear such a pragmatic take often coming from the space. So I'll salute you on that one. So let's talk about energy access. You mentioned that, your current government leadership, your current president is transitioning, I think, is it the compound or is it the presidency buildings?
Call it the Hassle Rock. Yeah.
The what?
It's called the Hassle Rock, where the presidential administrative office and residence is completely run on solar.
Okay, so it has this happened or is it still in the process?
It's work in progress. I think it's almost 60% completion. They should complete it before the end of this year.
Right, so it's going to move to run completely on solar.
Solar, yes.
Okay, but what you're saying is that this is going to happen while the Nigerian population, I mean, a significant population on the African continent. I mean, you are a big contributor and you have a huge population. So you're saying while about 60%, if I got you right, of this population does not have energy access.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So
we still run less than 5,000 megawatts as a country.
Wow.
Less than 5,000. So you hear the national grid breakdown. Like this year, it has breakdown about 2 times.
Mm-hmm.
For 5 months in my area, I've not seen electricity. So I have a fair share of what I'm telling you. So for the government taking that step to leave the national grid completely, I think is one side fixed all our strategy. First, I commend them because it's showing us that energy transition, renewable energy is the way. I think it's a very good platform to tell the world that he is also transiting and also every one of us to also follow suit. It's a good example. But also, it should also take a step further to also make this equipment very cheap. That's why we are talking about localization. Global North, support local base of these productions. If we have local base and reduce the level of import, it will create more jobs locally and also help us also to transit quickly because it's going to be accessible, it's going to be affordable because the affordability is also a big concern in the energy transition value chain, which most persons are shy away from. It's not cheap.
That's right.
Solar powers are not cheap. It's not for the poor. Or for the fainted ones without deep pockets.
So what would you say, or what have you thought about in your work, you and colleagues and others, looking to the East and not the global North, given the stocks of solar panels that they have that have gone down in prices? Is this a strategy you think that could mitigate this high cost of getting panels?
I think you shouldn't get it twisted. Whether the East, the North, they are not from Africa. So don't segregate them. They are not black skin. So whether East or North, they are all same for the profit. Mm. That's why I say let's make people first before profits. Let the East, let the North, let them begin to see how they put Africa first. Because Africa has been the beautiful bride. And if you are chasing a very beautiful woman, you should spend good to make sure the maintenance keep coming up, not the bride keep depreciating. So whether it's or not, let them begin to walk the talk to ensure that they make renewable energy technology or value chain become accessible and affordable for local community. Whether it's coming from the East, we welcome them. Whosoever is bringing it, but let them put the people before profit. I think that will be an equity standpoint of intervention. We welcome it. If it comes from the East, why not? Welcome. If it comes from the North, okay. But does it put Africa first? Does it benefit the local people? Or does it not end in Abuja or in Nairobi or in Batu or in Dakar or in Djibouti? But does it get to the local people? Policies ends in the capital and never gets to the local people. That's why I cannot stay in my capital today. I'm in my local community. So let us need to see how we localize actions and remove those bottlenecks and bureaucracies that keeps both the global North, the global South backward. We need to begin to see opportunities in each other. Africa have a lot to deliver. Let us not shy away from it. Let us not be separated. Africa has something to provide for the world. So let's embrace it. And also, the West has technology. They've gone ahead of us. We accept. Let them bring it and let's develop. So that, you know how many billion they spend in migration prevention? You know how many billion for security tightening? If Africa is developed, who will cross Mediterranean Sea going to Europe to go find clean air? To go find a greener pasture, 9 to 5. Nobody wants to do that when I can make my fufu in my village. I will not want to risk my life and go and die in Mediterranean Sea. So, but we have these things. Let the global North and the global, whether the East, the West, welcome the people. But do the right thing, put the people first. Give capital. Localize these actions. And not also use trick. Using one hand to collect, using the other one to drive us away from where our resources are. This will also not be good for the Mother Earth, so that everybody should also have fair share of the Mother Earth. This is my take, my brother. Thank you.
Right. So as we come to a close here, I want to go back to the micro everyday living. You are very confident and proud of the fact that you are in your local community and doing the work there. The specific village or context that you're in, what is its name?
Yeah, currently I'm where the first British colonists visited the Benin Kingdom. Benin Kingdom is one of the first organized kingdom in Africa, followed by that of Egypt. Benin Kingdom is 1887, 1888. We already have system of government running. We have our traditional means of exchange. We have investment. We have production running for us. We have bumper harvest, and we have celebrate ourselves and our wings. So this is what attracts the Great Britain to come visit us. After Great Britain, Benin Kingdom is another kingdom that you can also boast to see. This is where I am. And we are rich with cultural heritage. We are rich with our traditions. And we are deep-rooted in culture that drives environmental sustainability that drives economic development and that also drives respect, value for our culture and our people. So this is where I am in the Niger Delta, where I am speaking from currently. We have the Oba as our royal reverend monarch, who we reverend as a king given from us by God, creator of the mother earth, to rule over us. So we've been keeping those ancient histories that have our shared value in environmental sustainability, environmental governance, in environmental solution in driving our day-to-day living. So that is why I'm so glued to my roots. I'm so glued to my people, because this is our own way of life and how we contribute to the global space of people,
so culture, this,
and environment.
For an example, you mentioned benzene. I mean, that's so toxic. This benzene and these other toxic chemicals from oil spills, how do you as a citizen, I mean, does it come out in the tap that you open the tap? I mean, how do people who live there every day with you drink, water that is actually somewhat healthy? I mean, as an everyday person, how do you navigate this?
I think we need to find resources, and so that will bring you down, so that you come see the water for yourself. And I don't think you cannot drink it, because if you drink it, you can't go back home. But this is what they have. This is what we are living on. So it's what you have, you will drink. So you need to come do an experience sharing visit to these communities and see for yourself. I think first-hand information will grant you a proper understanding of what we are seeing. We are not just telling an empty story. We are talking about how people now live now, and how they were living before. And these people, the story is beyond what we can tell, but you need to see for yourself. I think that is what I will take, so that you have personal assessment of how this issue has been and how the people truly live. Then you now come back and ask yourself, is this what procedural risk of connected advocacy have been saying? And then it will form you better to understand how to help me tell our polluters to begin to see just transition as an equitable way to resolve this whole issue. Thank you very much.
I see you, Prince. And now in closing, my good brother, you are on the Just Energy Transition podcast, Jet Voices. And we are literally an intellectual and social jet for the movement. And of course, you're already aboard the jet. You are already aboard. You're a passenger. But we feel like you deserve a first class seat. And we need to hear your pitch for this. And so we're going to ask you to say something along the lines of, which will be your takeaway statement for the listeners.
Okay, thank you very much. I remember my humble self, Francis Rorica. I work with Connected Advocacy here in Niger Delta, Nigeria, West Africa. I'm on board a jet 101 today on the first class to say, Let us work together and make the difference. Together, we are better. Together, we can strengthen local communities. Let us come to the same table to solve the global issue. So I really want to see a co-creation initiative where the JET can pilot local to global engagement and see sustainable actions, not just talks, but real actions from the ground. So we are looking at the JET to help us amplify actions, to give us real actions from the ground. Thank you very much.
And where can people find you? So it's Connected Advocacy, is it .org.ng, right?
Yes, connectedadvocacy.org.ng. We are in all the social media platforms too. Thank you.
All right, my brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning into our JET podcast today. Before you disembark, don't forget to subscribe and stay connected. For more resources, updates, and ways to take action, visit jetvoices.com. Until our next jet flight, stay inspired, stay engaged, and keep pushing for a just energy transition.